The Kingdom of Ai, Chapter 8, The City of Academia. The man whose teaching originates with himself aims at his own glory. John 7:18. They began their journey just as the sunrise was driving away the night shadows. Less than an hour later, they found themselves approaching an immense red brick wall. It was covered with ivy and appeared to surround a large city, which extended as far as the eye could see. It looked quite old and appeared to have cloistered those who labored within its confines for many generations. As the road curved, so did the massive wall. They followed it until it led them to the grand-looking gates of the city. Just as they had seen in the front of each city they passed, a large signboard welcomed visitors and announced the town's motto, "Welcome to the City of Academia. I am powerful and superior because I have knowledge." The group stopped to read the sign. Stephen glanced at Timothy and said, "Well, let's get started. Andrew said it'll take us the full day to cross to the other side of the city." Timothy nodded and turned to the group. With a tone that Stephen thought sounded like forced enthusiasm, he said, "Let's go." As the group approached the intricately designed gates, they opened of their own accord, and the group walked into the city limits. Stephen observed the quaintness of the cobblestone streets. He thought the old-world feel gave the impression that the City of Academia had stood for centuries, predating many of the cities in the Kingdom of Ai. The shrubbery was neatly trimmed, colorful flowers adorned the campus, and very large old oak trees shaded the multitude of buildings, which were arranged in an orderly fashion. As they walked down the main street, Mary pointed out the landscaping to her fellow travelers. "This is so beautiful," she said. "In the City of Distraction, many landscaping projects were started but never finished. I didn't expect this place to be so lovely." "We believe in intelligent symmetry and orderliness here in the City of Academia," said a voice from behind them. The group turned to see a man with graying hair and a close-cropped beard looking at them over glasses which were perched on the end of his nose. "I am Professor Prodigy. Welcome to the City of Academia. May I give you a tour of our fair city?" "No, thank you, sir," Stephen spoke up quickly. "We are just passing through." He tried to keep the group moving down the road, but the professor was not easily dissuaded. He kept in step with them and suggested they at least take time to visit the temple which graced the center of the city. "It is our architectural crown jewel, a building of exquisite design and beauty, worth a few minutes of your time, to be sure," the professor encouraged. "We are actually quite determined to get through your city by nightfall, so we must continue on our way," Stephen said firmly. "Well, if you are traveling across the city on the main road here, then you will pass by the temple as you journey, so you will be able to view it easily. I will walk with you to the place, give you an introduction to the City of Academia, and then show you our beautiful temple," the professor announced with a tone of decisive finality in his voice. Stephen tried to dissuade him by saying, "We appreciate your cordiality, but we really need to be moving through the city as quickly as possible so we can reach our destination in a timely manner. We don't have the time to stop and sightsee." "What city is it that you are in such a great hurry to reach?" the professor inquired. "We are traveling to the City of Seekers," Stephen answered. The professor stopped in his tracks. He furrowed his brow and asked, "Have you ever journeyed there before?" "No, this is our first time," Stephen replied, without stopping or even slowing his gait. "Then please, my friends," he said, "allow me to tell you what I know of the City of Seekers from the testimony of others who have traveled there." The group slowed down and then turned curiously toward the professor, who was still standing in the road where he had halted upon hearing the name City of Seekers. "We don't have time to listen to this," Stephen said insistently to the others, "and I'm sure Andrew advise us not to do so." "I'm curious about what others have experienced there, and I don't know why it would hurt to hear what the man has to say," Ray said. "I agree," Mary added. "Let's at least hear him out." Stephen shook his head. He was convinced this was a dangerous idea, but the others were already looking expectantly at the professor, waiting for him to share his knowledge about the City of Seekers. "I have never ventured there myself," the professor began, "but I have had several students whose curiosity got the best of them, and they undertook this journey. They were enticed by some who had passed through the city of Academia and spoke of some type of spiritual freedom they heard was available in the city of Seekers, but they returned quite disappointed. He emphasized this last comment with the raising of his eyebrows and an emphasis on the word disappointed. The group listened intensely as he continued. They reported that the people they met at the gate of the City of Seekers appeared to be intellectually inferior to themselves. They were unable to partake in any serious conversation about the philosophy of their belief system with the citizens they met. When they tried to engage the city's gatekeeper in a friendly debate about the existence of a creator god, which all of the citizens there purported to be a king, he refused to enter into any reasonable exchange of ideas with them. He simply repeated over and over, "The king is inviting you to seek his kingdom of love, and you must choose for yourself if you will respond to his call." They left in disgust without ever entering the city gates after realizing the intense grip that religious delusion had upon its citizens. I advise you to give up this pursuit, as I believe you will encounter the same empty-headed fools and worthless religious chatter that my students discovered on their journey to the City of Seekers. Thanks for the warning, but we fully intend to continue on our way, Stephen said brusquely as he turned and began walking down the road. The others quickly followed. Well, the professor shrugged as he followed them, you will undoubtedly see the truth for yourself. When you find the same conditions I have described, feel free to return here to Academia, and we will be happy to share our enlightened perspectives with you. But while you are here, you might as well enjoy a tour of our temple. It's just a few minutes ahead. The group walked silently as the professor droned on and on about the wonderful attributes of the City of Academia and its outstanding citizenry. It wasn't long before they found themselves in the center of the city. Just as the professor had described to them, a massive ivory-towered temple loomed before them. An ornately engraved inscription was prominently displayed above the temple's entrance. It read, "Dedicated to the supremacy of the human mind." The group let out a collective gasp at the sheer magnificence of the ornate building. Stephen, who had restrained his reaction at the sight of the imposing edifice, noted the look of delight on the face of Professor Prodigy as he quickly launched into a monologue. As I mentioned earlier, the temple is the architectural crown jewel of our fair city. By your own reaction to seeing it firsthand, it is clear to me that you appreciate its resplendent beauty. People from all over the Kingdom of Ai come to worship the idol of intellect, which is gloriously enshrined here in order to obtain knowledge and expand their capacity for understanding. They willingly sacrifice time and money to obtain the favor of the idol and the blessing of the priests. Only our esteemed professors who teach in the hallowed halls of Academia are allowed to serve as priests to the idol of intellect. Surely you will not allow yourself to be robbed of this opportunity to expand your minds. Let me take you into the temple to show you how you too may make an offering to the idol of intellect and make petition to join our prestigious community. Stephen ignored the professor's persuasive appeal and spoke tersely to the group. We need to leave now. We are wasting precious time. Remember Andrew's admonishment. Yes, Stephen's right. We need to leave, Timothy echoed. The group of seekers reacted quickly and started to walk briskly down the main road past the temple. Though the professor called after them with an ardent tone, exhorting them not to squander their opportunity, the group ignored him. After a few minutes, Stephen shot a backward glance over his shoulder. When he realized that the professor had given up following them, he relaxed his pace and fell into step with the others. The group remained silent as they trudged for several more hours past the manicured grounds of seemingly endless rows of educational buildings. While they walked, Stephen pondered all the places they had passed through and how each one presented a temptation to abandon their journey to the City of Seekers. Is this journey ever going to get any easier? He asked, half to himself and half aloud. You will always have challenges to your faith as you travel toward the kingdom of I Am, said a familiar voice. The group turned and breathed a collective sigh of relief when they saw Andrew the Encourager walking behind them. Oh, Andrew, we are always so glad to see you, Stephen exclaimed. I was just wondering if this journey would ever get any easier, or if every place we go, people will try to discourage us from seeking the kingdom of I Am. You will always have challenges to your faith as you travel toward the kingdom of I Am, Andrew repeated. What exactly do you mean by the word faith? David asked. Faith is believing what you cannot see. You have not yet seen the kingdom of I Am. Yet you believe it exists and you are moving toward it by faith. The king has said it is so in his book of books, and you believe it by faith. You are acting upon that belief by faith, and by doing so, you are drawing closer to it every day by faith. A wise man once said, "The reward of faith is to see what you believe." That day of seeing is not far off. You are right. We are moving toward the city of seekers and the kingdom of I Am by faith, Mary exclaimed with a triumphant smile. Be encouraged. You have done well to avoid the snares you have encountered thus far, Andrew said kindly. Now the sun is setting and we need to find a place to rest for the night. There's a place we can stay just ahead. Stephen's ears perked up. Did you say we? Are you staying with us this evening? Stephen asked hopefully. Andrew smiled broadly. Yes, I am. There is much to discuss. After walking a short distance, the group came to an inn called the Oasis. Andrew seemed familiar with the place, and after they settled in their lodgings, they met in the dining room for an evening meal. What did you learn as you passed through this vast city of academia? Andrew asked as they sat around the table together. After listening to Professor Prodigy, it seems to me that the people of academia think very highly of themselves and their city, answered Timothy with a smirk on his face. Not only that, David added, based on the story he told about his students meeting people at the gate of the City of Seekers, I would say that it is very clear that the academians consider themselves to be superior to everyone in the entire kingdom of I. You are both quite correct, Andrew responded. Pride of intellect is a subtle snare. It makes the person in its grip feel superior to others. It also prevents them from being able to value the ideas and the gifts in other people that are different from their own. For example, the academians look down upon anyone who has not spent time in academia, even if those persons have achieved some measure of success in life without its input. But far more dangerous than that is the fact that intellectual pride hinders its possessor from being able to consider the existence of a divine being who both preexisted and created the universe. That stronghold of intellectual pride is what motivates the academians to vehemently espouse the preeminence of human capacity and simultaneously attempt to prove the irrationality of any belief in the king and his kingdom of I Am. That sounds very sad to me, Ben said. Does anyone from the city of academia ever seek to find the king? Yes, some do, Andrew answered, but it is only those who humble themselves who are able to seek and to find the king in his kingdom of love. Pride is a powerful deception which snares many people. The king resists the proud person but supplies great grace to the humble in order that they may find him. But how does a person humble himself? Ben asked. Stephen noticed that Andrew's eyes seemed more intense than usual as he looked around the table at each one of the seekers. Andrew began to answer Ben's question slowly, but with a tone of seriousness that commanded the group's full attention. A humble person acknowledges first that there is someone greater than self. He paused before adding, and then is willing to remove self from the throne of his own heart and place the king there. He paused for a few moments as the group considered his statement. Then he continued, "A proud person cannot do that because he's always thinking about serving self. Therefore, only the humble person will truly seek the king." The group sat in somber silence as all appeared to be contemplating Andrew's words. Stephen was trying to apply Andrew's words to his own life. "Am I truly seeking the king?" he wondered, "or am I actually serving self by trying to make myself more comfortable than I was in the city of respectability?" The question bothered him. Stephen's thoughts were interrupted by the arrival of food being served to their table. The mood of the group lightened as they passed the warm platters of meat and vegetables from one to another. "This looks delicious," Thomas said. "Yes, it does," Ray agreed, "and I am so hungry." The others laughed when Mary teased, "Ray, you are always hungry." As the group bantered back and forth while enjoying the meal, Stephen remained subdued, troubled by his own thoughts. Andrew, who was sitting next to Stephen, placed a hand on his shoulder. "What is bothering you, Stephen?" Andrew asked quietly. "I can tell that you're troubled by something I said." Stephen let out a sigh before answering. "I keep wondering if I'm truly seeking the King with a right heart, or if I'm just serving myself by trying to escape the misery I felt when I lived in the City of Respectability." The table quieted down as everyone stopped to hear how Andrew would reply. Andrew smiled. "It's good that you're concerned about your heart condition, because this is what concerns the King. But the truth of the matter is that no one can have a clean heart without the King's help. We cannot make our own motives pure, but the King can and will give you a new heart, one like his own. When you arrive at the City of Seekers, you will be told what to do. Be of good cheer. It is the King who has called you, and he will complete the good work that he has begun in you as you continue to seek after him." A look of relief spread across Stephen's face. "Thank you, Andrew. I appreciate your encouragement, and I really look forward to receiving a new heart. Before today, I never knew I needed one." "The good news is that you are not far from the City of Seekers. You will pass two more cities on your journey. The first one is the City of Wealth and Luxury. The second is the City of Sorcery. Be on guard, as there will be a strong appeal to enter Sorcery, but you must resist it. For now, it is time to get a good night's sleep, as you will need to rise early to begin tomorrow's journey."